Here are the highlights from the latest episode of Free Talk Live. Visit freetalklive.com for the full episode.
It's Ian here with you.
And Pickless Mountaineer.
And I am the Reverend Captain Kickass.
Let's go to the phones first to someone calling themselves The Situation in Oregon. You're on Free Talk Live. Go ahead.
Hear me now.
Gotcha.
10-4. Yeah, I was calling... I don't know what time or day it is over where you're at. Sometimes I get your show like a day or two late. So last I heard on the radio, you were talking about the bank collapses.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And the bailout, Janet Yellen, the Treasury Secretary or whatever.
Yep.
Yeah.
I was going to bring up, you know, they call it a contagion or whatever. It's the same old COVID China virus playbook. Is what they're going to use here.
What do you mean?
They've been using it. Well, just how they're like, we're not going to require vaccinations, and then they require them. You know, mm-hmm. all this. It's really nothing. It came from this, not from that.
Well, it is interesting, to the caller's point, it is interesting that when these articles about finance and banking are referring to sort of the domino effect, right? One of these banks fails and it affects some other banks and some other stuff. They refer to that sort of secondary effect as a contagion or the contagion, right? So if, like if FTX failed and it affected a bunch of crypto businesses, they would refer to that as the contagion effect of FTX. And so now with SVB and what are the other banks? I can't remember.
Signature Bank.
Signature Bank, and there's a third one.
Silicon Valley. There was another C because it was the CCC.
No, it was, right. SI. This would have been Silvergate.
That was Silvergate. Yes, so and then Credit Suisse.
Oh, Credit Suisse. Right. So for these four banks, at least, as they fail or otherwise have financial troubles, they are referring to the secondary effects, how that affects other banks, as the contagion, which I find really weird. In a financial community and financial periodicals, in financial writers, to be referring to it as a contagion.
Yeah, there seems to be a very careful use of language that ties together, on the one hand, the Great Reset, right, which is, you know, the financial change that is occurring right now is tied into that sort of zero COVID policy, which is tied into the zero carbon policy, which you got to think for a second. Do you know how it is possible to completely eliminate a human-specific virus? Oh, you have to eliminate all the humans.
So
that's
the
how you do that.
Where were you going with this, the situation? I'm not really clear.
I was just pointing out some, basically it's another pandemic. You know, it's affecting banks worldwide. You know, like everybody's saying, the world banks are invested in the U.S. dollar and treasury notes, and they're worthless, and all the nations that are holding them are basically part of the house of cards.
Well, in this case, I'm happy to see the banks contract this particular problem because I am no fan of the centralized banking system and don't care how many of them go down.
Well, and there's a strange parallel here, too, because so there has been question as to whether or not the coronavirus actually existed or not. All of this really fundamentally comes down to the question of whether this money exists or not.
Let's come back to the banking thing, because World War III is probably a little more important than that, although they're both pretty big stories and both very, very important. And we talked a couple, maybe a few weeks ago, about the Seymour Hersh 5,000-word report, I think it was.
Not to be confused with the Seymour Butts.
He published.
Under the Bleachers publication.
Seymour Hersh, of course, a longtime journalist, investigative reporter who's been reporting since before I've been alive. This guy was, you know, reporting back in the Vietnam War.
He's old school.
Yeah, he's literally in his 80s. And
okay.
He's still out there, still doing this just really just amazing work of uncovering the real stories. And he came out with a lengthy report on his Substack account, which is seymourhersh.substack.com, all about the Nord Stream pipeline explosion that happened in, I think it was September of last year, getting into a lot of detail on exactly how that went down, involving the CIA, the military.
Is there a train of thought that suggests that the pipeline incident was the precursor to the current financial situation?
No, I wouldn't say that, but it's definitely not helping the people of Germany. That's for sure.
It definitely exacerbates the situation. So the way that this has contributed to the current financial situation is this was an effective way of getting energy into Europe from Russia.
Right.
So now there is no effective way of getting energy from Russia into Europe. And this is, of course, like, so this is the physical side that is paralleled
by the... Which means costs go up.
Right. And this is, of course, paralleled by the sort of social political side where Russia says, well, we don't want your oil anyway.
Right.
Except, of course, they physically rely on it to not die.
So instead of having a faucet full of oil that they can tap into whenever they want to, now they have to move it via...
Truck it in and ship it.
Truck, train, plane, whatever it is, right? The old school methods?
Right. Okay. So all of these are contributing to higher costs of energy. And those higher costs are putting strain on the entire economic system.
So instead of, even without the explosion of the Nord Stream, the Germans still, the government still hadn't approved it. It still hadn't been turned on because of the sanctions they were holding off on doing that. But now they can't turn it on at all, even if they wanted to. So what we found out was happening was Russia was selling its liquefied natural gas to Asia, to China, who were then selling
jacking
it
up
to
the
Europe.
Price.
Yeah, so they just basically added a middleman. So then China would then have to load it onto tanker ships.
Yeah.
Then those would have to sail around over to Europe, God knows what extra cost to do that. Mm-hmm. And then the Europeans were paying to get that liquefied natural gas off of the tankers and then into their communities. Wow. So just a tremendous waste of resources.
And one of the things that this does is it cranks up the inflation costs.
Sure.
Because, I mean, money printing is the source of inflation, but there are a lot of products that increased in their price because they relied on oil, of course, to move products, to move the things that we needed to make the products.
And let's not forget government shutting down businesses and that kind of thing affected supply chain
and
moved inflation forward another degree.
Right. And giving all these people the money that they would have earned had they been allowed to go to work. So now the European Central Bank has had to follow the Federal Reserve in cranking up the interest rates.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So once you crank those interest rates, all of your banks are holding these things that are no longer nearly as valuable as they need them to be.
According to a source within the intelligence community, the president hasn't done so, nor will he, because he knows the answer. Sarah Miller, an energy expert and editor at Energy Intelligence, which publishes leading trade journals, explained to me in an interview why the pipeline story has been big news in Germany and Western Europe. Quote, the destruction of the Nord Stream pipelines in September led to a further surge of natural gas prices, for the reasons we already explained, that were already six or more times pre-crisis levels. Nord Stream was blown up in late September. German gas imports peaked a month later, in October, at 10 times pre-crisis levels. Imagine your gas bill in your home going up 10x. Imagine your electricity bill going up 10x. That's what those people are having to deal with.
My electricity bill went up, it doubled.
Yeah.
So is that 2x?
Yep.
All right. So I can't
imagine.
And
that's a lot.
Can't imagine. Yeah.
That's a shocker.
No, right? I mean, oh my God, like so much so that I, because I have a bank account locally with a credit union in the New Hampshire area, they have taken to marketing to folks like me, whatever that means, whatever my demographic fits, like, hey, do you need a loan to help pay off your utility bills? We're approving you, pre-approving you for up to like $3,000. And I'm like, seems like a low amount considering like inflation and the cost of living and all that kind of stuff. Seems like a very low amount for a credit union to be marketing to an individual as a utility assistance program, right? Like, not only are you going to have to go, my utility's doubled and boy, am I underwater because of it, but you're going to have to go, sure, let me borrow some money and then pay you some interest on top of it, right? So that like I can get out from under this thing.
Yeah, my gas company is just extortion at this point. They literally will not tell me how much they're going to charge me to put it back on.
Oh, God.
Yeah, I've had to stop paying the gas bill.
Yeah, I've got, hopefully soon, some work starting on my house where one of the things to be included is an off-grid heating solution, something wood burning.
Oh, nice.
You know, maybe a wood stove, pellet stove, something, but something that will work without electricity. I spent a portion of this winter, there was a couple of days where the power went out.
Mm-hmm.
In like,
and you have electric heat.
And I have electric heat and nothing else.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it was only out for like one night, so 2 days and one night. But, man, that one night was freaking
cold.
You
bundle up and that's about all you can do.
Yeah.
Yeah, and here's the thing. I would have other options for my heating, except for the government regulations that do not allow someone to enter competition with this company.
Mm. So electricity prices across Europe were piled up or pulled up, and governments spent as much as, again, adding to the banking crisis, 800 billion euros by some estimates, shielding, quote unquote, households and businesses from the impact. So they subsidized people by printing more money out in order to pay off the electric bills to, quote unquote, get through the winter. Well, of course, now the it's coming due when the banking situation.
And of course, whenever they do that, it just makes whatever of that currency that you're holding onto in your safe or in your bank account or under your mattress
worth less
than it was before they printed it. In a moment of just sort of self-promotion, I've been telling folks that, yes, I am releasing a three-song, all-original heavy metal EP. Right? That's just three songs. It's not an album, which would be like, I think you got to do like 7 or 8 songs minimum to do an album. So an EP, extended play, this is old school terminology.
No one knows what that is anymore.
It'll be released on July 4th. So everything I'm doing up until now, sort of leading up to that, if you happen to attend Porkfest or Forkfest, right? Forkfest is like the week leading up to the Porcupine Freedom Festival, and then I'll also be at Porkfest. You could come and find me and get a copy of these three songs, and I'm hoping to maybe have some Captain Kick-Ass t-shirts available with that. I'm hoping to do a pre-sale kind of a thing here in the next month or so where folks can go to my revamped website, CaptainKickAss.com, which it's been live for like a week now, but I'm only just saying it now on the radio because I'm satisfied that it's finally like
you think it's coming.
Acceptable.
Yeah. Yeah.
There was some weird thing going on with the preview, so if you posted the website in any social media, the preview would come up as like just a bunch of like stuff that I didn't write and images that I'd never included. I think I've got that all fixed. So CaptainKickAss.com, you can go find out about, I've got t-shirts there now for Captain Kickass and Beard Talk Live.
Yeah, that's right.
Available, plus like links to all of the stuff I've ever done, all my previous heavy metal bands, my parody work with the Kickass Parody Project, etc. and so on. So
CaptainKickAss.com?
Thanks.
Okay, great. So we were talking about the latest from Seymour Hersh on his Substack account at SeymourHersh.substack.com. This is the investigative reporter who's been active for decades, just uncovering some of the most important stories in our history. And this, of course, is another one, the Nord Stream pipeline explosion, where Hersh revealed through his contacts in the U.S. government and that it was the CIA, that it was the U.S. military, that it was Joe Biden that orchestrated this explosion that has kept the German people a lot colder this wintertime.
I have a question. The Nord Stream pipeline.
Yeah.
Where does it like begin and end?
Russia is where it begins, and it ends in Germany.
So that's it.
Yeah, and it goes in the
destinations,
Baltic Sea.
Like along the way that there's
not to my knowledge.
You know, wise
straight
or
shot.
Taps?
Okay,
so just between those two countries.
Yeah, if it was going to go anywhere else, it would have to get shipped out of Germany, which is a realistic possibility if there was peace in Eurasia.
Okay.
So the last bit here he's got is talking about how Biden and this German Chancellor Olaf Scholz had a meeting earlier this month. There were only two public events, none of which included any kind of question and answer by the press corps, which he says hasn't bothered to ask the White House press people any questions of substance about the Nord Stream explosion and the true, you know, story about what went on there.
And I gotta ask, why are none of the, like, I get it, you're all mouthpieces for the government, but you'd think just to keep up appearances, someone would ask, oh, hey, you're investigating this, right? Because you didn't do it, right?
Right, right. Yeah, I guess not. Instead, it was later reported that Biden and Scholz had an 80-minute long meeting with no aides present for much of the time.
Meanwhile, Scholz is there going, I see nothing! I know nothing!
There have been no statements or written understandings made public since then by either government. But I was told, says Hirsch, by someone with access to diplomatic intelligence that there was a discussion of the pipeline expose. And as a result, certain elements in the CIA were asked to prepare a cover story in collaboration with German intelligence that would provide the American and German press with an alternative version for the destruction of Nord Stream 2. And maybe some of you saw that in the news. I didn't actually look at all the details on it, but there's been something floating around that it was just six randos on a boat or something like that.
It was aliens, man. Aliens.
Six randos on a boat.
I didn't read the story.
Well, I mean, the original explanation for this was that Russia had done it to themselves.
They wanted them to kill. Yeah.
I am the pipeline now.
In the words of the intelligence community, the agency was to pulse the system in an effort to discount the claim that Biden had ordered the pipeline's destruction. A little bit more here from RT's summary of the Hirsch discussion with the China Daily. They say the initial purpose of mining Nord Stream 1 and 2, built to deliver the Russian gas to Europe through Germany, was, quote, to give the president an option to say to Putin, if you go to war in Ukraine, we're going to destroy the pipelines, which, of course, he said in February before the Russians went to war.
Oddly, it happened.
Biden himself publicly confirmed that stance, but, quote, unfortunately, those people in the Western press seem to have forgotten, said Hirsch. Just under 3 weeks before the launch of Moscow's military operation, Biden warned during a press conference on February 7th, and we played the audio on this show,
yep.
Quote, if Russia invades, there will no longer be a Nord Stream 2. We will bring an end to it. I mean, that's enough of a smoking gun right there.
Well, you see, this is your basic detective work. Mm-hmm. See, now, if someone blows up your car, and I know for a fact that this person had the means, had the motive, had the opportunity, and specifically expressed a desire
they
to
were
blow
do
up
it.
Your car, yeah. Then clearly what actually happened was you blew up your own car.
Right. Finally, according to Hirsch, the U.S. leader decided to order the detonation of mines at the bottom of the Baltic Sea in September because the conflict, quote, wasn't going great in Ukraine, unquote, from a U.S. perspective. There was, at best, a stalemate during that period in what Hirsch described as the American war that President Biden was so eager to support.
Who blew up the underground mines? Supposedly?
The United States.
Okay.
They set the mines in tandem, apparently, with the Norwegian government, mm-hmm. I believe.
Wouldn't that be like a defensive measure normally? Like, let's say you're building this Nord Stream pipeline. You don't want any potential sabotage to happen, right? Saboteur, you don't want any, you know. And so within X amount of radius of said pipeline, you plant some mines, right, for example, right? Because you don't want anybody sort of getting near it, and you want them to blow up before they blow up the pipeline, mm-hmm. right? That seems to me like a defensive measure. So for them to go in and plant new mines to blow up the pipeline seems weird.
Well, weren't defensive mines placed around
the
pipeline.
So there was no, like,
no.
field of tripwires or whatever surrounding the pipeline.
I'm pretty sure that's still against international law.
Yeah.
And they like to not get caught doing that. So
that doesn't necessarily mean they won't do anything like
well,
that.
Well, yeah, no, I mean, blowing up the pipeline was also against international law, but, you know, they haven't officially been caught doing that, whereas, you know, leaving a bunch of boat-sinking bombs, a little easier to go, hey, wait a second, this has got a serial number on it.
Yeah,
I'm clear now.
In the Baltic Sea, there should be the ability for just the average person to just putter around with their boat or whatever, right?
You would think so.
Go fishing and stuff like that.
Scuba diving, snorkeling.
You don't want to fish up a mine. That might ruin your day. And
I remember when Biden was pulling everyone out of Afghanistan, and we were all sitting around wondering, okay, so what's the next war that we're preparing for here?
Right.
Oh, that was
well,
here it is.
And here's the thing. Yeah. He keeps seeing that, hey, these people want to, like, get peace again. They're, like, trying to negotiate peace with each other. Stop that. And they just wouldn't stop trying to, like, every now and again a little bit, talking about maybe possibly having some peace. So he took away the highest incentive that Germany had to not have a forever war on their doorstep.
Let's talk to Bad Slave in New Hampshire. Go ahead, Bad Slave.
I'm remembering back to the DNC days during, you know, the Mueller investigation of Hillary.
The DMC days.
DNC?
Democratic National Committee.
DNC. Okay, got it.
And Seth Goldman, who ended up dead, was Uma, what's her name, and Wiener, her husband, they were part of the game back then.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know who those people are.
And he had
Oscar Mayer.
And he had
Anthony Weiner.
Mind-bendingly
corrupt, and of course got caught in like the most absurd scandal
and appropriately named.
Yeah, yeah, and yeah. No, so, but, yeah, the corruption on Anthony Weiner goes much, much deeper than you might expect, especially if you look into his wife and who her best friend is, and that's how you get Epstein'd.
Can we be frank about Anthony Weiner?
Well, so anyways, I thought that in the emails that showed up off of Anthony's computer that I think were sourced from Hillary, because that all got mixed together at some point in time. I think it was WikiLeaks that actually, received that information. There was a guy, kind of a snoopy guy that a PI, I suppose, that was involved. He had a nice big video of his involvement in collecting that data. But anyways, it had nothing to do with Russia. and not only that, I think amongst the emails from Hillary was this communication between Cy Hirsch and Hillary Clinton.
Okay.
That kind of a mentor, mentee arrangement. I don't know. It seemed like he was pretty involved in something that didn't look
so
good.
Are you talking about like the private investigator that starts looking into the Seth's mysterious death and then experienced a mysterious death of his own?
No. He actually was contacted by Seth before he was killed and gave this guy the data, and I think it ended up in the WikiLeaks stream. And
I'm a little lost. Who was contacted by who? Seth?
Yeah, I'm a little lost too.
No, the guy, I can't remember his name. He had a really nice video of he ended up in Russia as well. This guy, family and everything. I mean, he was definitely put at risk.
It honestly would not surprise me in the least to find a whole lot of sort of breadcrumb trails that went to Russia leading from Hillary Clinton, because it is kind of a standard tactic to accuse your opposition of what you in fact are doing. And it has definitely been their go-to move to say, "You're in bed with Russia," every time someone does something they don't like. Russian President Vladimir Putin announced plans on Saturday, that is today, to station tactical nuclear weapons in neighboring Belarus. Putin said the plan was in response to Britain's decision this past week to provide Ukraine with armor-piercing rounds containing depleted uranium.
Now, I remember depleted uranium from the Iraq conflict, if I recall correctly, 20 years ago, and it became a subject of some controversy because the depleted uranium, once the rounds are shot, the depleted uranium sticks around.
It
right?
does, and it just continues to slowly poison the area.
Including the people of, in this case, Ukraine.
Yes. And, just for a short period of, say, the next 12 millennia or so. A few civilizations and it'll stop irradiating.
Doesn't this seem counter to the whole claim that the Western powers are saying they're there to help Ukraine if they're going to be using depleted uranium on the battlefield there?
It sure does seem counter to the claim that they are helping the Ukrainian people. They are helping the Ukrainian people into an early grave.
To poisoning them, basically.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. This is absolutely a maniacal toddler saying, if I can't have it, no one can have it, and trying to tear the toy in half.
I don't necessarily think that dropping technical nukes in the area is going to help the Ukrainian people either, so I don't see Putin as
it
really
certainly
being
is not
of and help here either.
And, you know, I really hope this is just saber-rattling and, you know, trying to put on a fierce face and, like, not let you get away with crossing the nuclear boundary here without some comeuppance. Because so far, his general tactics have not been the, like, salt the earth, slash and burn, you know, victory at all costs kind of war. This has been basically trying to, you know, trying to win, but to maintain as much as possible the possibility of having good relations with the rest of Europe when this is all over with. Which, I gotta tell you, irradiating part of the continent is not a great way to keep good relations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'd heard about the depleted uranium stuff, so that's what Putin is saying is his reason for doing this. Because I know he had said previously that if the Ukrainian, which is, of course, the puppet for the U.S. and, you know, these other Western countries, that if their missiles could reach into Russia, that then Putin would have to continue the invasion into Ukraine to push further west into Ukraine to make sure that these missiles would not be able to reach Russia. And so I would just my initial thought was this had something to do with the continuing push into Ukraine. But
yeah,
maybe not.
And the thing is, I honestly can't put this past Putin because Ukraine is the entry to Russia. If you are trying to march an army into Russia, this is basically the only effective way that you can do it is through Ukraine. So I can't put it completely past him to say, you know what? I'm going to just make this whole radio, this whole area radioactive.
Is there an actual? Sorry, is there a statement from him that you can read? Where's the story from? Is it RT or elsewhere?
This one's Associated Press.
Okay.
Now, to be fair, I think that this next bit is just propaganda. Russia falsely claimed these rounds have nuclear components. Now, okay, I get that there is some question as to whether this counts as nuclear, because depleted uranium is not capable of a nuclear explosion. That is definitely true. But to say that it does not contain nuclear components when it contains uranium...
Right.
is not really truthful either. Belarusian President Alexander Lukashenko has long asked for the weapons, Putin said, speaking in an interview on Russian state television. So, yeah, the Belarusian president has been like, come on, move these nukes in. And Putin has been like, you know, I just don't want to provoke Europe and NATO into going any further than I have to provoke them. But now he's like, oh, well, if you're going to cross this boundary, I can cross it too.
My name is Tanya, and I'm calling because I wanted to answer your question about where diplomats go to get training.
Oh, okay, great.
And they go to the Foreign Service Institute, which is also called the Schultz Center, and it's in Arlington, Virginia.
It's called the Schultz Center.
And is that run by the government?
Yes, it is. It's part of the Department of State.
Okay. Now you know, Captain.
Mm-hmm.
Knowing is half the battle.
Yeah.
You know what the other half is?
Dying.
The battle.
Oh, okay.
First you have to know, then you actually have to do the battle.
Yeah, okay. I gotcha.
Could we not?
Tanya, how do you know this? Have you attended said diplomatic training?
Actually, I have. I'm a Foreign Service officer.
Can you tell us, like, when they're training people on how to use diplomacy to solve problems, you know, can you give us like a point or two that you were taught or, you know, something in the curriculum you learned that you found was valuable?
I didn't go specifically for diplomacy. I'm a technical officer,
okay.
So I went for language training several times. But my colleagues who are in State Department, a lot of it is listening and trying to, see the other person's point of view. And I don't know if that actually goes on in back rooms on a higher level. But, you know, that's pretty much the basics of diplomacy, is actually trying to build consensus. And so to do that, you actually have to have a little empathy, and you actually have to see from another person's point of view.
So what you're saying is the skill sets that, well, the three of us here in the radio studio have today, the ability to listen, the ability to interpret, mm-hmm. and the ability to ask questions, are all the same skill set that diplomacy people would, or diplomats
and
would
empathize, which of right. course would mean that politicians should never be involved in these processes because they are total psychopaths and have no empathy.
I think people actually have those skills, like intrinsically, you know, you just have those innate skills.
Most people do, but psychopaths are the exception, right? Psychopaths, by definition, are people who do not feel what other people feel. They cannot place themselves in the shoes of another. They cannot have
lack
empathy. Yes.
Well, and I think to a large extent, empathy is like a language. Now, if you are immersed in an empathetic scenario, if you are surrounded by empathetic people, if your parents show you what empathy looks like, then just like any language, you will naturally pick this up and you will speak it as a native speaker does. If, on the other hand, you do not see empathy, you do not experience empathy, you never get a chance to develop it.
That's a great point. Tanya, anything else you want to share about it tonight?
No, I'm overseas and in a difficult country, and I'm just praying that
are you deployed or are you overseas, you know, of your own volition?
No, I'm working.
Okay.
Yeah. So just say a prayer for the people of Haiti. Let's just put it that way.
Yeah.
All right.
Good luck down there.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for the call.
Thanks, Tanya. Appreciate it.
We got Jimmy on the line in Florida. Jimmy, you're on Free Talk Live. Go ahead.
Hi, Captain Kirk here. Captain, what are you guys going to do? You're making yourself enemies of the United States. The United States is going to fire these same shells into your free state of New Hampshire one day.
First of all, let me stop you there, Captain Kirk, Jimmy, yeah. whatever you are. The United States government has made themselves enemies of the people, not the other way around.
Oh. So you're going to be okay there. General Jimmy says you cannot defend that land.
Did you completely miss what he said? We're not going to be okay. We've never been okay. The most powerful military force that humanity has ever created has been against us since before we were born. We're not okay. Oh. That's why we talk about this.
That's why we're here.
Jimmy believes, based on his previous phone calls, that, you know, secession is an impossibility, but if it does happen, he fully believes that the U.S. military will invade. And that's where you're coming from, right, Jimmy? You think the U.S. military is going to invade New Hampshire or Texas or whoever it is that secedes first and just start dropping bombs and shooting depleted uranium. That's what you're saying here?
That's correct, yeah.
They're psychopaths. So I mean, it's certainly possible that they could do something like that to their own countrymen, to their own supporters, by the way, because whenever independence happens, there are going to be people who are against it. Okay, so those people are like you. You would call them loyalists, for instance. And so if 70% of New Hampshire votes for independence, that leaves 30% of the people of New Hampshire who wanted to stay in the United States. And you believe that the U.S. government will come in and bomb those people too, right?
Yes, they do.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Absolutely.
We don't think that's going to happen, though. We think that that's the old way of secession. That's the 1800s mode of secession, that today it would not fly. That would not be acceptable to the American populace by like 93% to 94%, according to recent polls, or a recent poll that was done in 2022 on that very question. But certainly that is the big fear that a lot of people have, is that this psychopath American government will turn its guns on its own people. And I understand why people believe that, because, well, they do turn their guns on their own people regularly by putting peaceful people in prison cells who've never harmed anyone else.
Like you, for instance.
Yeah, I'm one of them, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
Well, so here's what I don't think you understand about the nature of these maniacs. They do, in fact, operate by having a majority of people accept what they're doing. They can, the cost of operating is too high if the majority of people, or even a very significant minority of people, not only don't help them do what they're doing, but even in the slightest way start to slow them down. It becomes too costly to collect the extortion that they are collecting from these people if they lose legitimacy. Now, the second that they start firing on their citizenry, they lose all of their legitimacy in the eyes of a tremendous number of people. It's a game-losing move for them to do that.
When you succeed, you are not the citizenry. Don't you understand that?
I don't think you understand how citizenship works. I mean, if you believe in citizenship, and I think the whole thing's a scam, but let's just accept the idea that, you know, somehow there is a duty of obligation in return for an obligation of protection, which is what a citizenship is, or a duty of allegiance in return for an obligation of protection.
That's the definition, yes.
Yeah, we know that doesn't exist because their own Supreme Court has ruled over and over again that they have no obligation to protect you, but let's just accept the idea that it does exist. They certainly like to pretend that it exists. When you leave the United States physically and you move, let's say you want to move to Japan or Mexico or something like that, you do not cease to be considered a U.S. citizen. You would have to renounce said citizenship in order to no longer be considered a U.S. citizen. So by definition, when a political move or maneuver of independence happens, where people vote for independence, that is not the same thing as removing citizenship. Those people in New Hampshire or Texas or California, wherever it happens first, are going to
Florida.
Say, whatever, I haven't heard much out of Florida, but...
I can hope for them, too.
Yeah, wherever it happens, those people will say, okay, we're independent, we're no longer part of the United States as a state... We're now our own nation, but every single one of those people would still be a U.S. citizen up and until some of them have babies in the new non-U.S. states. So any babies had in Florida after that point would likely not be considered.
Or if the United States went ahead and said, okay, you are a country, and since you are now a country, you can, from a different country, renounce your citizenship.
Caller, you are on Free Talk Live. What's your name?
Hey, it's Tim from Florida.
Tim, you're on the air.
Hey, I was just thinking in about your situation and also Ari's situation, you know, with the sentencing coming up and all.
Yeah.
And that was awful what I heard you say the other day, and I'm glad the judge postponed it. That's really awful what they recommended.
You're talking about how the recommendation was 30 to 70 years?
Wow.
Yeah.
In this case, yeah.
Inhumane.
Well, one of the things that I don't like about these sentencing postponements is, I mean, we are, you know, a media program, right? We do media, we have podcasts, we're a radio show, we're, you know, a video stream, you know, globally, you know, 170 radio stations, that kind of thing. So, like, we have the unique ability to make some noise about this kind of thing, as little as it seems to affect anything. But we do have that ability. What I don't like is the government is able to do this thing where they can, like, rule by time. And they can just sort of kick this can and kick this can and kick this can and kick this can until most folks, like, they're aware of it. But it's kind of, you know, it's released from the news cycle, the thing everybody's all up in arms about recently. And they're like, oh, yeah, I remember that from a couple of, oh, they're just finally getting around to that. Oh, that thing's like, and so, like, there's no more... We'll call it outrage about the situation, which to me is very sad.
Like when they have been recently admitting, okay, so yeah, the lab that literally studies these viruses is actually where this virus came from.
a bunch of people said and were banned for and deplatformed and disconnected and prevented from, you know, making their money and doing their job if they're like reporters or activists and that kind of thing.
And have not been given back their right to say, have a platform.
You know, to some extent, it would be nice to just get it over with. But on the other hand, having an extra couple months or 3 months, I guess, in this case, because it's June 29th, so 2.5 months, gives people more time to write in because, you know, people procrastinate, right? Oh, yeah, I'd like to write a letter. And then life happens and they get busy and then they forget about it. Oh, crap, is it too late? It's not too late. If you want to go to letters.freetalklive.com, we're actually getting close. I'm not keeping close count. I should have, but I didn't. So I think we're getting towards 100 letters. So thank you to everybody that has taken the time. It's been very, very nice to read. You know, you don't normally get to find out the ways that you affected people's lives, right? Like, yeah. But that's happening here, and I get to read those things. So thank you. It's really, really a touching to go through your letters, and then we send them off to the judge. And so if you want to do that, please go to letters.freetalklive.com. The instructions are there as to how you can write to the judge in the case in the Crypto 6 for my sentencing. Go ahead.
I would like to point out that the extension of this is actually an intricate part of the punishment. Because as Arya is quick to point out, she doesn't know what's going to happen in her life.
Yep, it's frustrating.
Is she going to have access to human beings, or is she not going to have access to human beings? So every time they kick this sentencing down the road, they increase the period of time where there is this absolute uncertainty.
It's definitely stressful for Arya. There's no doubt about that. And it's no fun for anybody to not be able to start something new. You can't really be crazy, right? You can't start something new if you're just going to have it cut off unceremoniously 2 months later. Joe is in Florida, listening online. Go ahead, Joe.
Hey, I just wanted to make a correction about the 2 weeks that Florida was shut down. It's actually false. We were shut down for at least 6 months.
Wow.
And I didn't bother researching it beyond that because people that were saying Florida didn't shut down or only 2 weeks or 2 months or whatever. 6 months obviously blows out of the water.
Now, when you say shut down, can you describe what that meant for you there in Florida on the ground? What was that like?
Yeah, so I was actually a delivery driver, food delivery driver at the time. Mm-hmm. So I was busy. I was like going to, you know, restaurants to deliver to people's houses, and restaurants were completely empty inside. Like some restaurants wouldn't even allow the driver to go in there and pick up the food.
Crazy.
We'd have to, you know, use the drive-thru if there was one, or a pickup window, or something like that.
Contactless.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that was Executive Order 2068, obviously, in March of 2020, just in case someone wanted to actually look it up.
Thank you for that.
The beaches, this is all done by Governor DeSantis, by the way. He did this unilaterally. These are executive orders, and they're, you know, all online and all that stuff. Like I said, 2068 Executive Order. And you know, he had guidelines for people on the beach, like how many people you could have in your party on the beach. Gyms were shut down.
Remember that.
Bars were shut down. It goes on and on here. You had to be deemed a essential employee, which thankfully I was.
Yep.
Let me see here. I'm looking at the executive order right now. I'm trying to find.
Let's just talk about the timeline then. So you said it went into effect March of 2020, right?
Yeah, March of 2020.
And this was the governor with an executive order. That means a piece of paper and a pen where he signed his name and said, yes, I am putting this into effect, regardless of whether or not anybody voted for it or it was put to the public in any way, shape, or form, right?
Yep.
Correct, 100%. I'm literally looking at his signature right now on the
Does it say His Excellency on there? I'm just curious.
Let me see here.
It's usually at the top, you know, from the office of.
Let me go up here.
Just curious, because that's what it says on the orders, the executive orders here in New Hampshire. Maybe it's like an old New England state thing,
maybe. And
it doesn't happen in, you know, some of the later joining states.
No, I think it's just self-aggrandization for Sununu, but.
No, I think I think it would be any governor in New Hampshire. So anything like that on there?
No, it says on the top, it says State of Florida, Office of the Governor, Executive Order Number 2068.
Okay. All right.
So March of 2020, when did this order end, or has it?
He said 6 months.
Well, it was for 60 days, and then I looked it up 60 days later, and it was renewed for another 60 days.
Mm-hmm.
under a different executive order number. I don't have that off my head, but it's in there. Yeah. And then 60 days from there was renewed with another executive order, all this unilaterally, for another 60 days. And beyond that, I just stopped researching it.
Okay, so that's how you got to the 6 months. Okay.
So at least 6 months. Could be longer.
Yeah.
Good work, man. Thank you.
As long as it took him to figure out that it would benefit him politically to roll this back and completely change his, you know, public persona on this to embrace the opposite, and that would get him some brownie points with his base. So then he decided to go in that direction.
Oh, yes. It's all propaganda. Like there was a press conference he was doing, where there was kids behind him wearing masks, right? Mm-hmm. And this is like when everything was kind of changing. He's like, oh, you don't have to. He knew he was like on a hot mic. He said, oh, you don't have to wear that. You can take them off right now.
I remember that clip. That was getting passed around. Oh, yeah, DeSantis, he's based or whatever. He's a lying scumbag. Yeah.
It's amazing to me. And thank you for bringing all this up because, like, people tend to forget these details.
This minutia. He definitely wants you to forget this.
Yeah, and of course the states, the governors, the politicians, the people who enforce this stuff want you to forget and go, well, it really wasn't that bad, and like I guess we made it through. And like, no, it was horrible.
We were
steps away from martial law in the United States of America. We were so close. The only thing missing was them deploying tanks and the military in the streets.
All right, let's go to David. He's in Georgia. You're on Free Talk Live. David.
Hey, I was just listening to yesterday's episode about the Coinbase and the SEC and all this mess.
Yeah, the SEC, Securities and Exchange Commission, going after the biggest of the big, Coinbase, the largest, I think, to my knowledge, cryptocurrency exchange in the United States, being threatened by Coinbase. Also, one of the top decentralized exchanges, SushiSwap, also being targeted by Coinbase. Justin Sun, the founder of the Tron cryptocurrency, and some of his promoters have been targeted, and it's just nonstop. They just keep on coming out with these threats.
You've got excellent recall. I just want to say that.
What did you have to say about it, David?
Absolutely. And the more they keep doing this, the more they're going to push these companies either underground or out of the country. Mm-hmm. And when they do that, then they'll have no control at all over it. Like for example, I was just thinking, if I was to want to sell, say, Monero or give Monero to somebody in like Nigeria or like Mexico, I can't use the peso or the Nigerian Naira. So what I would have them do as a token of, hey, you're getting out of this system and into something better, would be to take, say, 1,000 pesos out of the bank and record a video of them burning it with fire and turning it into ash, and then send them the Monero for doing that action.
So you're paying them for a service.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Probably a crime. I know that I believe it's a crime to destroy money in the United States, so it wouldn't surprise me if it's a crime in other countries.
So if I chuck some USD into a bonfire, that's
criminal.
You may be putting them in some jeopardy if I use it to
like wipe my butt first and then chuck it into the fire.
Possibly help you legally speaking.
Yeah,
and maybe stinky,
but it might be legal for you to wipe your butt with it.
That is legal actually.
Yeah.
Yes.
I'm not giving you legal advice, but
the destruction of it is still illegal.
You're not allowed to mutilate it, however, beyond a certain point. So as long as the serial number would be readable after you wiped your butt with it, Captain, I suspect it might be legal, but I'm not a lawyer, so you may want to check with one.
New Captain wipes, they're expensive.
And to speak to what he was saying about not pushing this overseas, not pushing this underground, so that is exactly why they're not telling you not to use cryptocurrency.
Yeah.
They're not telling you it's against the law to have a cryptocurrency business. They are enforcing it.
Mm-hmm.
They are absolutely saying, nope, that's illegal. But you told me it was legal. I got the paperwork and the documentation where you approved me to do this thing.
Right.
And they are enforcing it as if it were against the law. But they will never announce that it is against the law, because that would drive everyone in this industry beyond their reach.
Right. That would be like them applying, laws about radio to the internet. Two completely different mediums, one reliant upon a static connection right? The other one reliant upon OTA broadcasts, over-the-air broadcasts, right?
Thank goodness the FCC has never pulled that one off.
Yeah. Well, but what I'm saying is cryptocurrency...
That's what they're doing in Ukraine, by the way. They're regulating the internet there.
Cryptocurrency is a new invention that deserves to be looked at as its own individual thing, right? As a whole industry, a whole new invention, right? So to say that, oh, it's just like every other... No, it's not. It's better than every other currency. And in fact, it does more than any other currency on planet Earth does. It can be programmed with features, unlike most state fiat currencies. In fact, all of them, they can't be programmed with features. They can only like add like a new stripe or change like the way the printing is, you know, that kind of thing.
Well, since you mention it, the central bank digital currency that is currently in use in China, from my understanding, is quite programmable.
David,
and that's really the biggest problem with retail central bank digital currencies is that you can program them for things like this can only be spent on these things. Mm-hmm. It will disappear after this period of time.
Right. The difference being they are centralized and cryptocurrency is decentralized. It's a huge thing. It's like saying my car has wings, but it does not fly.
David, any other thoughts you want to share?
Yeah, just get your cryptocurrency as fast as you can when Biden and all the rest of these people come on the TV and say that, hey, the banking system is fine. That's when you need to get out, because that's the same thing they said in 2008.
There's a gentleman I've been following on social media, Peter St. Ange. He's a PhD, and I believe he is with the Mises Institute. He's been putting out daily videos on the topic of the banking situation. I thought this one was interesting because apparently the next one to potentially fall is Deutsche Bank.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a biggie.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you want to talk about globally important systemic banks. Like, this is... like, every time that I have seen some kind of, like, chart or workaround of, like, here's what the European banking system looks like and how their connections work and what relies on what, dead center.
It's the big hub.
Dead center is Deutsche Bank.
I'm going to just jump into this here, and I'm sure you'll have a few things to say about it, Peekless, since you've been following this pretty closely as well. This is his post he made today at his Twitter, at Prof. Stange, Stonge.
I was going to say ONG is the spelling for those listeners.
Yeah, so here we go.
Hey guys, so it looks like Germany's biggest bank, Deutsche Bank, is in trouble. It's so bad, even Jim Cramer likes it. Why? The short answer is that, like all big banks, Deutsche Bank is a fraction reserve bank, meaning it is permanently bankrupt. It does not have the cash. So the slightest morsel of risk can cause a panic. In fact, that risk came by the truckload these past couple of years when the ECB printed trillions of euros to finance COVID lockdowns and then yanked interest rates up to cover up the inflation. Of course, the Fed did the same thing, as did the Bank of Japan, really all major central banks. Note, this was also what crashed Silicon Valley Bank, bond losses from Fed hike. And it's a widespread problem, so there may be more banks to come. So what if Deutsche does collapse? Now, Deutsche Bank is gigantic. It's about 7 times bigger than Silicon Valley Bank. Relative to the German economy, Deutsche is more like 35 Silicon Valley banks, or a pair of JP Morgans, if you prefer. Yes, banks are bigger in Europe because regulators in Europe serve the banking oligopoly even more enthusiastically than we do in the US, although we are catching up. Now, in the EU, bank closures work pretty much like they do in the US. So you get a combination of the central bank and government deposit insurance, and they have 3 options, close it, sell it, or bail it out. Now, Deutsche is too big to close. It's the 4th biggest bank in Europe, so that's not going to happen. Deutsche is also too big to sell off in little pieces. So they'd have to push a shotgun wedding like what they did in Switzerland last week, where you force another bank to buy the failed bank. Now, finding a husband is tricky because Deutsche Bank is so big, and EU regulators like to keep it the family. They like to keep foreign banks out. So it may have to be a European bank, and there are really only 3 in the EU that are bigger than Deutsche Bank, none of them famously well run. So that brings us to the most likely scenario, a bailout, ideally one that's hidden from voters, which probably means either a huge line of credit, free, freshly printed euros, or a so-called bail-in where depositors take a haircut to keep up appearances, but taxpayers foot the rest. In practice, given Deutsche's size, you'd probably expect a combination of the two, so a shotgun wedding paired with a bailout. like with Credit Suisse, where the central bank forced UBS to marry Credit Suisse. But
which, by the way, as I understand it, UBS is also still in difficult straits. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the absorption, and that's what the only name that I can give it, right? They absorb a bank, right? Once that occurred, the big sucking sound you heard was their stock tanking as the absorption occurred, and it still hasn't recovered.
Yeah, so I really have to emphasize here a very fundamental economic principle.
Yes.
You cannot get rid of risk. It cannot be done. You can move it.
Mm-hmm.
You can move the risk from here to there. So our entire system has said, well, we'll just distribute the risk so that no one major bank falls. It'll just be either the entire system or none of them.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, guess what that means ultimately happens eventually? Sooner or later. And okay, well, it's been 100 years of this system, and might I add only like 30 years of the entire globe being on fiat currency.
Is that it?
Yeah. Switzerland was the last ones to go to fiat, and they went in like 92 or 94.
Wow.
Yeah, just that recently. So you cannot get rid of risk. You can move it around. So all of the risk that just got moved from Credit Suisse is now in this bigger bank.
And when you say risk, are you talking about the risk of a bank run or other types of risk?
Yeah, risk of the bank run is definitely the biggest one. But there's also credit risks, and there's the risk on whether people will pay their mortgages in all these mortgage-backed securities.
You just heard highlights from the latest episode of Free Talk Live. You can download full episodes, subscribe to our podcast, listen live, and more. All for free at freetalklive.com.